Well, as I mentioned in a recent lesson, for the last several decades, humanism, liberalism, postmodernism have been hacking away at the pillars of society. And we have God and the Bible and Christianity, marriage, heterosexuality of all things, all been really hacked away at and threatened and challenged in such a way. The latest, of course, is last year we spent talking about gender fluidity. I didn't think we'd ever have to talk about that, but here we are. The idea that you can just randomly change your gender. This is just a bunch of wicked nonsense, honestly. Even so, many still long to be spiritual despite that, and they recognize that there's something more to them and to the world than meets the eye. In other words, you can etch God out of existence if you want to, or redefine him to your liking, or really subdue him to a point of non-existence, but you can't deny that human existence is something more than merely biological or physical. There's just something there that you just cannot suppress. But at the same time, such people do not want to be responsible, they don't want commitment, they don't want to be burdened, they don't want the sacrifice of what we might call organized religion. You know, religion with churches and moral duties and learning and teaching and defending a specific doctrine, being held accountable for your actions, etc. And thus, allegedly, people have found a way to make it all work, and they claim to be spiritual but not religious. Or you might see SBNR, which is spiritual but not religious, acronymically, okay? So, in fact, in 2016, they had taken some polls about where people stand with religion. Over 20% of the United States population, and this is frightening, over 70% of the 19 to 28 age group identifies as spiritual but not religious. This is a chosen worldview of a population that is increasingly self-gratifying, self-centered, and narcissistic. This is a group of people that want to have it all, freedom to think and do and believe whatever you want without consequence, and at the same time, a non-interfering dose of spirituality. But this is an empty and hopeless and even self-refuting claim. If you think about it, it's kind of like saying, I'm married but not in a relationship, or I'm a person but not human, or I'm alive but not breathing. You know, it's just that typical doublespeak of the postmodern generation. We read from Ephesians 4 in our scripture reading. I'd like to come back to that, especially in verse 17, where Paul has something to say about the way of the Gentiles. And by Gentiles, in this specific context, he simply refers to really the unconverted mind, okay? Not necessarily Gentile by race or ethnicity, but simply the way that they think. And he says this, he says that you no longer walk as the Gentiles also walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding, excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart. And they become callous, have given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. And goes on to say, you didn't learn Christ that way. Not only did you not learn him that way, but you didn't learn how to do those things through him, is really what he's saying there. And so what he says in verse 17 through 19 really does describe the general character of the spiritual but not religious crowd. They are darkened in their understanding, separated from God because of spiritual ignorance, and have given themselves over to all kinds of sinful behavior. Yet without concern for the damage being done, the losses incurred, or the ultimate consequences. Now, let me just clarify real quick here. I'm not saying that every person who's involved in that, who claims this as their religion or their philosophy, is consciously doing all the things we just said. What I'm saying is this is a route that they have taken. This is a route that they have accepted as their own. And this is where it's going to lead them, and it's these very things that have allowed them to go down that route in the first place. Okay, so I don't want you to think that I'm getting up here and saying that every single person is of that mindset entirely. They're not, but they are on that route. Colossians chapter 2 and verse 8, Paul says very clearly, see to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deception, according to the tradition or teaching of men, according to the elementary principles of the world, rather than according to Christ. This spiritual but not religious movement is yet another empty deception of the world, and this lesson is a plea for anyone who hears it to not follow it. To take seriously what we're going to say here. One big excuse for people flocking to the spiritual but not religious bandwagon is what they claim to be disenchantment with organized religion. I was looking at a close cousin of this spiritual but not religious, which is called Why I Love Jesus But Hate Religion. You can see YouTube's on this, different versions of that. But basically it says that all religion is bad because it starts wars and many people are killed in God's name. And all religion is bad because churches are filled with hypocrites and false pretenses. All religion is bad because churches don't really care about people or making the world better, but all they care about is churches. And religion is bad because Jesus never came to start a religion, but to love and forgive and just simply save everyone. I mean, if you watch the videos, and I did watch some videos there, and this is what they say. So I'm not just assuming this. I'm telling you this is what they say. Apparently, church bashing is the new form of Christianity. Or if you want to go to the extreme of spiritual but not religious, religion bashing is the new form of self-justification and moral independence, then in other words, doing whatever you want, believing whatever you want. Church bashers and religion bashers do have some legitimate complaint. In other words, there are some churches that are guilty of all the things that they accuse. That's true. There are some who call themselves Christians who are indeed hypocrites. That's true. There are some religions that are imposing upon people and taking advantage of them. That's true as well. So there are some legitimate complaints there, but what they really have a problem with is the same thing that genuine Christians have a problem with, and that is not what they think. First of all, it is what we call denominationalism, or religious division, man-made religious division that doesn't come from God. And we have a problem with that. There's no way that we can preach a gospel that gets separated out into 600 different flavors or varieties and then call that a united gospel, because it's not. So we have a serious problem with that, not just because it's our problem, but because it violates, contradicts the New Testament. Okay, here we have people claiming all to be loyal to Christ, but all looking differently than Christ. Church traditions posing as divine doctrine to be equal to or even better than what is expressed in the Bible. This also is a problem. This is not new. Even Jesus confronted this back in Matthew chapter 15, verse 3. He told the Pharisees, "Why do you transgress the commandment of God for the sake of your tradition?" Well, that's going on today, right? Okay, so this is not a new thing. He goes on in verse 9 of Matthew 15, he says, "But in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines the precepts," or really the teachings or understandings of men. So this is going on, and yeah, it's a problem, and we have a problem with it, and apparently the religion bashers have a problem with it too. What about church going, posing as authentic discipleship? Or we have fans posing as followers, spectators posing as servants. We have a problem with this. Those of us who are meeting on Thursday night, we were actually looking at ourselves in light of this, that we don't want to be fans, we want to be followers. But we have a problem confronting all the time, whether in our own groups or even in ourselves, this idea of, you know, we're not genuine followers if we are just posing and playing a part. But even so, even giving them all that, and that's what I'm trying to do here, just simply say, okay, let's concede a couple points here that you do have some valid claims. Even with all that, there is no excuse for abandoning the entire biblical system of Christianity, the Christian religion, which includes churches and includes doctrine and discipleship and personal commitment, just because you can cite some abuses or misuses of that system. The problem is not what God gave to us in the form of organized religion, or we could say a religion that is organized. Rather, what the problem is what people do with what God has given to us. It's the abuse that is the problem, not the thing itself. God also gave us marriage. He gave us family. He gives us money. He gives us a government. He gives us free will. He gives us his gospel message. James 1:17 says he gives us all kinds of good and perfect gifts. But people have corrupted and abused and misused those gifts, and then ironically, turn around and blame God for all this. That's just not fair. That's not legitimate. That's not good critical thinking. The gospel of Christ and even the church of Christ, I don't mean our congregation, but Jesus' church, was not given by God to be a burden to us and to suck every bit of joy out of our lives. That's not why we have this. But it is for our own good. It is for our best interest, and it is to make us better people than we could have ever been on our own. That's why it was given to us. John chapter 15, verse 5, Jesus says, "Apart from me, you can do nothing." Well, that's true, but imagine what we can do with him, okay? I mean, just think what we can do with Christ when not just him on our side, but quite the opposite. When we are on his side, what we can do in his name. The spiritual but not religious crowd may claim that they're disenchanted with organized religion, but the underlying ultimate ulterior motive is this. It is simply a rejection of God or anyone else telling them what to do. These are people who want to live life on their own terms without you or I or anyone else or anything else questioning them or especially interfering with them. They claim to be spiritual, but yet it is in such a way that does not need or is not obligated to follow God. Thus, they like the feeling of spirituality, but they don't want to honor the one who gives life to the human spirit, whether now or in the hereafter. And that's really just kind of pulling the mask off the whole thing. I mean, it sounds good up front, you know, I'm spiritual but not religious, you know, because, you know, religion's got a bad name and I feel good about myself because I'm so spiritual. But when you just pull the mask off and say, well, what you really want is you want just God to butt out of your life. You want him to just stay out of your life and religion to stay out of your life and not have anyone tell you what to do, just live life on your own terms. That's pretty selfish and self-centered. Which is, of course, part of or a manifestation of our very, as I said, narcissistic society. In 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4, Paul says here that God desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. When you see that phrase, knowledge of the truth, that's New Testament language, which means obedience to the gospel of Christ. So God's full intention then is to provide otherworldly truth to prepare us for what is coming, which I'll talk about shortly. But in Acts chapter 26, verse 28 through 29, here is Paul testifying before King Agrippa and Festus, and he's Agrippa replies to Paul, "In a short time you'll persuade me to become a Christian." And Paul says, in essence, "That's exactly why I'm preaching. It's because I want you to become a Christian." So Paul speaks, if you back up in verse 25, words of sober truth. And the intent of his gospel is to teach men to become Christians and then to live as Christians thereafter. And this spiritual but not religious crowd, what do they teach? Absolutely nothing. So we're teaching something positive. Not something we came up with, something that was handed to us, entrusted to us, a responsibility to make us responsible people. Spiritual but not religious wants to simply wave all that off, shrug all that off. Really what God is saying through these few verses and many others if we had time is the only way to truly be spiritual is to love God, to obey Christ, to become a Christian, and to live faithfully as a Christian. You say, well, why would anyone want to do that? Because it's in your very best interest to do so. And all this begs another question, that is, how do we define spirituality outside of the context of religion? Which is, by the way, ironically, specifically for the spirit of man. Religion would not exist if we were not spiritual people, if you think about it. That's what its whole premise is based upon, that we are indeed spiritual. So the spiritual but not religious crowd advocates a no answer, in essence. They don't have an answer here because, well, according to their whole understanding of things, there isn't one. Merely being spiritual is a feeling. It's not a systematic faith. It's defined emotionally, subjectively, individually. It's not defined by a core values or a set of core values. In other words, it may mean one thing to me, but it may mean something completely different to you. And if we had 100 people in the room who all claimed to be spiritual but not religious, we'd have 100 different versions of what exactly that meant. Spirituality is just really all about elevated feelings about nature and people and life and that sort of thing, but it doesn't do anything, and it doesn't require anything from anyone, and it doesn't transform anyone into anything better than what they are presently. So we have a religion that just exists. We have a philosophy that is just absolutely pointless. And I found what I think is a perfect analogy for all of this. Some of you who are older will appreciate this. Back in the mid-70s, there was a guy who came up with the idea that, the perfect pet would be a pet you didn't have to feed, you didn't have to water, you didn't have to take on walks, you didn't have to take to the vet, you didn't have to get it spayed or neutered, you didn't have to do anything. And he came up with the idea for a pet rock. Now, you who are younger, you may have never heard of this, but I remember all this, and I just was thinking, even at the time, as a pretty young person, that this is a ridiculous idea. Well, he made $1.5 million on this pretty neat idea, okay? And he sold a lot of these things in order to do so. So, as you see at the bottom of the screen, the illusion of having a real pet is like the illusion of having real truth to live by when, in fact, you don't. So here it is. This is the pet rock of our generation, this religion that claims to be spiritual but not religious. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to take care of it. There's no obligation. You don't have to be inspired by anything or inspired to do anything. It's just there. And you claim it. You put a little check on the box when the form comes to you or when someone's taking a survey, and you say, yeah, I'm spiritual but not religious. There's your pet rock. Completely pointless, completely useless, and completely non-life transforming. Now, don't get me wrong, the spiritual but not religious crowd is full of opinions. They're ready to unload them on you anytime you ask, but they don't have a whole lot of facts. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way. They just don't have any facts. There's no factual evidence or information that they're going to provide as a foundation for what they believe. And we've talked about this before, this I think, I feel, I believe scenario. These people gush with I think, I feel, I believe, but they have no standard of authority to cite or to defer to because they just made the whole thing up to begin with. When you pluck a philosophy out of thin air, you should not expect for it to actually make sense or think that you can defend it intelligently, since inherently it has no substance, no authority, no credibility, and no point. It's just there, and you just accepted it, but you're not going to be able to defend it at all. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 13, Jesus says some words to all of us that should make us sit up and take note of what he is saying. He says in Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14, "Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. For the gate is small and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it." Jesus here speaks in definite, absolute truth. Realistic terms. He offers credible proofs to who he is and what he has done to substantiate his heavenly teaching. He offers miracles to substantiate that teaching is from God. He offers the fulfillment of prophecies. He offers predictions that of his own that he fulfilled on his own. In other words, he has some credible evidence to offer to substantiate all these things. And in no uncertain terms, this is what he says. He says, in essence, there is a right way to think and a right way to believe, a right way to live, and a right way to prepare for the hereafter. And there is most certainly a wrong way to do that as well. I just want you to think about that. This is not Jesus' opinion of things. This is someone who speaks with clear and otherworldly authority. And this is what he's telling us. Someone who has come from the afterlife, if you will, in other words, the spiritual realm. And this is what he says to us. In John chapter 14 and verse 6, you know the passage there where Jesus says, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. That is exclusive language in two senses. First of all, it is unique. No one else can say it. And then secondly, it's exclusive in that it excludes any other way, truth, or life that would come up to contest it. This spiritual but not religious movement is just another faddish philosophy that thinks that it has found a way around Jesus' words, thinks that it's found an escape clause from all moral responsibility, that thinks that it is smarter than God, but it's actually listening to Satan. Think about that. Thinks that it's smarter than God. It's not listening to anything that comes from God. I have some questions. You might too. And I have a lot more questions than what's here, but we'll just go through the few that I have here for this lesson. Some questions for the spiritual but not religious person. First of all, I would like to ask, who told you that you were spiritual? Where did you get that from? Spiritual means not physical, not tangible, not visible. But if you cannot see, feel, or measure your spirituality, then how in the world can you know it even exists for real? You can't know anything factually that it exists unless, of course, you were told by someone with authority. If you don't believe in the existence of God, well, then there's only one other explanation, and that is evolution. But nothing in the theory of evolution has anything about spirituality or metaphysics of any kind. Evolution cannot explain any kind of metaphysical existence. It has no way to create it. It certainly has no way to prove it. In fact, even the evolutionists are fond of telling us that the conscious mind is just the brain firing a bunch of neurons. What you're thinking and perceiving your expression of your own existence right now, it's just your brain imagining. It's just like one big dream. And then when you die, poof, dream just disappears, and so do you. I mean, that's what evolution really teaches. So that means that you just added make-believe things to evolution in order to make it work, but you can't prove it. Now, don't be too alarmed with that. The evolutionists have been doing this for a long time, but here's just another thing that they've added. Now we're suddenly spiritual people, even though evolution has nothing to say about that. Or if you do believe in God, well, then you got that from the Bible, because the only way to know anything factual about God and his existence and his son and your soul and sin and salvation and the afterlife is from the Bible, which is the revealed word of God. Thus, you admit then that you will listen to the Bible when it tells you what you want to hear, when it tells you what you want to believe, but you reject whatever doesn't fit into your expectations or your worldview. But in either case here, you're really just picking and choosing what you want to believe and discarding the rest. And then you have the gall to blast away at the failings of man-made religion, hypocrites in the church, people using the church and religion as a means of personal advancement. You're doing the same thing yourself. And you're either oblivious to this, which is possible, or you just don't care, which is also possible. Second question. What kind of life does the spiritual but not religious movement prescribe for you or for anyone else for that matter? What positive contributions does this make to the world? Well, since it is purely contrived to begin with, it cannot possibly offer anything meaningful. It's just like someone digging a giant hole but not filling it up with anything. It's just a big hole in the ground. And that's what this is. This is just another religious or philosophical hole in the ground where we have removed all authority, all doctrine, all acts of faith, religion, the discipline life, everything, but we've got nothing to put in its place. Because you know, or at least you should know, that the spiritual but not religious movement has no goals, there is no game plan, there is no objective, no purpose, there is no direction. It has no teaching, it has no virtues, it has no ethics, it has no values. Why would you choose something like that? Unless, of course, you're just selfish and that's the way you want to live. Why would you choose something like that unless it's just out of sheer convenience, which is exactly what it is? But other than that, it has absolutely nothing. At the very best, what it does is it hijacks Christianity for all that it teaches, which it gets from the Bible, which the spiritual but not religious rejects. And just like the atheist, it says, well, just go out there and love everyone and be a good person and be charitable. But you know you didn't learn that from the spiritual but not religious crowd, nor the atheist, by the way. You learned that from Jesus Christ, whom you have rejected as your Savior. So what I'm getting here then is that you're taking things from the Bible that you like and you're putting them into your little religion, which you think is not a religion, your philosophy here, and then you're saying, this is how I want to live my life. You're just simply cherry picking, as we used to call it in the retail industry. You know, when someone bring their ad in for all our advertised items and only buy those things, that's not why they're supposed to get in there. They're supposed to get in there to buy a few of those things and then all the upper, higher priced things, right? Okay, you're cherry picking. The analogy falls short. I know that. But still, I always got irritated by that. So think about what Jesus says here in Revelation chapter 2 and verse 10. He says, be faithful until death, and I will give you the crown of life. I want you to understand that the New Testament context provides a meaning and definition of what faithful is. When it talks about faithful, we are faithful in Christ. We are faithful to Christ, and we are faithful for Christ. What does it mean to be faithful to the spiritual but not religious movement? It means absolutely nothing. There is no meaning to it. There's no reward if you are faithful to it, and there's no consequence if you're not. So what's the point? You have a philosophy or even a religion that has no teeth, no bite, nothing to offer. Third question, what does a spiritual but not religious crowd have to say about righteousness or sin? How does it define either one? Do these even exist? In the spiritual but not religious world, righteousness is, of course, subjectively determined because it has no higher or objective or fixed standard here, no absolute standard. Anything and everything is right as long as, they will say, it doesn't harm others. My immediate question, that is, where did you get that from? Or who told you that? You just made that up. And how do you determine whether or not you're harming other people by the moral decisions that you make arbitrarily? How can you determine that? And if you're not harming people that are all around you, perhaps you might think that, but how are you harming society with such decisions? And we're seeing the effect of that today, aren't we? Moral decisions that are harming society. What about sin and guilt? Well, these things cannot exist if there is no right and wrong. Someone says, yeah, so let's get rid of the right and wrong thing, and then we won't have sin. Well, it's not quite that easy. It sounds good up front, but it just doesn't work that way. That's not how you get rid of sin. So all of this ultimately reveals this ulterior motive that I mentioned earlier. The primary reason someone wants to be spiritual but not religious is not because they are noble-minded, virtuous, humanitarian, etc., but because they want to live however they want without accountability and without consequence. That's really what it comes down to. I wish we had something better to say about those people, but ultimately they just want to do what they want to do. And they don't want anyone questioning them. And if they want to swear, then they're going to swear. If they want to lie, then they're going to lie. If they want to cheat, they'll cheat. If they want to steal, they'll steal. If they want to commit adultery, they'll commit adultery. If they want to be a homosexual, they'll be a homosexual. If they want to be a closet pedophile, well, then be a closet pedophile. If you want to switch your gender, switch your gender. You want to be morally irresponsible, be morally irresponsible. You want to trash everything that is sacred because it doesn't agree with, you know, your particular worldview, well, then trash everything that's sacred because it doesn't matter anyhow. It's a perfect platform for a generation of people who have been taught from kindergarten to the university that they are their own gods and they are their forgers of their own destinies. And yet, as we have already seen, their hearts are filled with, sadly, darkness and deception. James chapter 3, verse 15, there's a passage there that talks about really what jealousy and selfish ambition lead to. And James says it leads to disorder, or really that word means moral confusion. And he says there that wisdom that promotes such things as jealousy and selfish ambition is not from God. It's not good. It's not noble. It is earthly, natural, and demonic. What he's really saying in so many words is it's pure evil. I'm not saying those people who accept it are trying to be purely evil. What I'm saying is that the teaching itself, the wisdom that promotes such thinking, is itself pure evil. And people who do accept it with no good reason otherwise, they will be held accountable for that decision, which leads me to the final question we'll discuss tonight, and that is, what will happen to you when you die, and how do you know that? Suppose you buy into the spiritual but not religious movement and all the usual trappings, and this is usually what comes in with it, reincarnation, pantheism, which says that God is everywhere, a feminine view of God, universe is God, all humans are basically good people, and all you need is love. I was going to sing the song, but someone might object. The thing is, though, after death, after you bought into that and advocated all these things and just, gushed with your kind of, postmodern hippie life there, you've lived life as you've pleased, but now how does it profit you now that you're dead? Now what? After death, what then? Jesus said very clearly in Matthew chapter 16, verse 26, he says, "What will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul?" What does the spiritual but not religious movement say? Do you even have a soul, or do you just disappear after death? And how do you know that for certain? And are you willing to risk all of that on the basis of an unprovable theory that you have in this life because you just wanted to do what you wanted to do? Death, really, the afterlife, is that which rips the mask off of the spiritual but not religious movement. It is in death that spiritual but not religious and all the followers of human philosophy and false religion and satanic lies, it is in death that those people face the truth and therefore face the reality full strength of their decisions but without any recourse. At that point, there won't be any ducking or excusing or abdicating or opting out. Suddenly and horrifyingly, they will be faced with what they've been running from all along, and that is the truth. And that is also God himself. Not one's version of God, but God himself. We're told in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10, we're all going to appear before the judgment seat of Christ, and each one of us is going to basically answer for everything that we did in the body. By the way, this is true for the spiritual but not religious, as it is for the atheists, as it is for the hypocrites in the churches, as it is for the faithful Christians. This is where everyone is going to ultimately stand. And Christ, the Son of God, will not care about anyone's claim about how religious they were. He will simply ask the question in so many words, "What did you do with the soul that I entrusted to you during this life?" That'll be the question that will have to be answered. Spiritual but not religious has no good answer to that, just as that has no good answer to anything else regarding the soul's responsibility to the one who gave it life. But you know that standing before God and finding that out is just a horrible time to realize you've been terribly, terribly deceived. I want to be real clear with this lesson here. I know we're speaking boldly and strongly, but I want to be clear. We're not talking this way because we don't care about those people. Quite the opposite. We do care about all such people. We're simply revealing the absurdity and the hopelessness of this movement, not to make us feel better or make us feel smug, but to wake those people up if possible. And there is another reason, too, and that is to help prevent anyone in the 19 to 28 age group. Remember, 70% of those people surveyed say that they choose spiritual but not religious. We want to address those people and tell them to understand what you are buying into is not just a false idea, but it is really a ruin of your soul. It is a ruinous decision. We may all have questions about God and what he does or doesn't do or why things are the way they are and even why God allows religious error to be so widespread. We all have those questions. Every one of us does. But it doesn't change the gospel truth. It doesn't change what he's revealed. It doesn't change what he's told us to do. God wants all people, atheists, agnostics, witches, Satan worshipers, the irreligious, the spiritual but not religious, everyone else to come to the knowledge of the truth about him, the truth about ourselves, the truth about our problem, and the truth about his solution. He wants everyone to come to that truth. Here's an interesting way of looking at it. The spiritual but not religious mantra offers no truth of its own, no meaning to life, no savior, no forgiveness, no grace, and no hope. And yet God offers every one of those and more to the one who will come and understand and believe and surrender his or her heart to him. Here's the deal. The afterlife is coming. Believe it or not, it's coming. Like it or not, it's coming. Prepared or not, ready or not, it's still coming. And we will all answer then for the decisions that we made and are making right now. It is therefore in our best interest to choose wisely what we believe and how we are to live. Bottom line is, religion is not the problem. Human sin is the problem. It always has been. And God has the only solution to our problem. No, and it's not religion. It is his son. But his son did come to give us, for lack of a better word, a religion called Christianity. And that is in our very best interest to learn that, to honor that, and uphold that as he has directed, not as we have chosen to do ourselves. God has the only solution. No one else has that solution but God himself. As I said earlier, this lesson may seem to have come out of the blue. You may not have even known about this particular movement, but here it is. And it is affecting our young people in particular. This is something we need to know about. I would invite you, if there's anyone who is ready to obey Christ, ready to come into God's family, ready to have their sins forgiven, ready to have their souls saved, this would be a great time for you to respond by coming forward, being baptized into Christ, if that is your endeavor. In any case, if we can help you, let's help you as much as we can. Come forward if you want to as we stand and sing the song Bob selected for us here.